It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Okay, welcome to the show. Here we go. Good stuff to talk about today, and Lisa is itching to push that fastest five button. Hit it, Lisa.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
Well, Scott, the market is looking pretty good.
Yeah, Friday's market was another nice, steady market. I know a lot of people wanted to see the Dow close above 13,000. Just didn't happen. I didn't really expect it to going into a long weekend, you know, with so much going on overseas. But
well, everybody takes a long weekend, too, and they take off on Friday. So, you know, if you don't have people buying, then you're not going to have – the market's not going to go up.
Yeah, nobody's looking to increase their risk going into a three-day weekend. But Dow up 46 points on Friday to close at 12,950. S&P up 3. NASDAQ down 8. A little bit of volatility with Apple, but that's to be expected after the run that they've been on. Gold down just a little bit, down 4.5, and oil up another dollar to 103.
You know, the thing, I'm sitting here thinking, I'm going, you know, the thing with the oil is that now people are starting to get a little nervous that it could start to cut into our economic growth. And of course, you know, look, this is a big chess game going on. And the folks in the Middle East, the Iranians in particular, their government, not their people, but their government, I'm going to make that distinction, their regime there knows quite well, they're not dumb, they know very well that the if we put pressure on them, then they know that if they rattle their sabers back at us, that that causes nervousness in the oil market, and there's a risk of a conflict. They know that that's going to cause prices to go up, and they know that hurts our economy and causes inflation and causes people to worry and hits the people filling up their tank of gas. They know that's their way of fighting back for our economic sanctions. Is that's their form of economic sanction against us, is to hit us at the pocketbook in the gas station filling up.
Yeah, well, it's starting to show up in inflation numbers, which I know we can talk about in a couple minutes, but it's not really showing up in consumer confidence numbers, leading indicators, things like that, which we can also talk about. I have some data for you on that. Overseas, optimism in Europe is up. German officials decided that they were going to ease up on the pressure on the Greeks, and everybody is expecting the final details of the bailout money to be paid to be finalized on Monday.
For the Europeans, is it basically the lesser of two evils? Is that really what it boils down to?
It is at this point.
I mean, either we give them the money or they default, and which one's going to be worse for them?
Yeah,
that's basically the answer.
Yeah, the rhetoric is getting hot, though. The Germans are basically calling the Greeks incompetent, and the Greeks are basically saying that the Germans are super oppressive, which Germans are a little sensitive to. And in the category of you forgot you lived in a glass house, German President Christian Wolff resigned amid a scandal over political favors. So not everything is just quite so peachy keen in Germany as most of the press would have you believe.
Well, you know, I'm appalled, Scott, that you would suggest that there could be bias in the press and that they don't always report the whole story or even the actual real story.
It certainly doesn't look good for Angela Merkel, and she doesn't really need the pressure. But Anyway, so that's pretty much what's going on overseas. Pretty quiet. Corporate news on Friday. Campbell Soups had a nice earnings announcement. Heinz had a nice earnings announcement. I know you'll be glad that Senator Kerry's value has increased in the day. And General Mills had a little bit of a rough day, said that they were going to lower their 2012 earnings forecast. So not such great news for them. Economic news, a couple of important pieces today. Consumer prices climbed 0.2% in January. A lot of that was gasoline.
That's just for the month, though, right?
Just for the month. Biggest gain in 4 months.
And I think the thing we need to always do is make sure we know whether something is an annualized number or if it's for the whole year or if it's just for the month. So that's just for the month. So the annualized number is inflation now is running about 2.5%.
The year-over-year number with that last report was 2.9.
Okay. So I'm a little light on my number. So 2.5%, 3%.
Still pretty tame.
Well, historically, if you look at the 30 and 50-year periods, inflation's been running between 3 and 4%.
Yeah, pretty tame. And the Fed said they expect it to stay tame, and that's why they've said they're not going to raise their rates for a couple of years. Because
they gave us the last promissory language they used was not changing it until the end of 2014.
Yeah.
So that's a full almost 3 years.
Yeah, that's a long time.
It's a long time to have that kind of telegraphed position for the Fed.
Yeah, it's a long time.
And, you know, because of that, Scott, of course, USA Today reported out latest CD rates. God bless. 6 months, 0.2%. That's for six months. That's the annualized rate. 1 year is 0.35%. So you get 1/3 of 1% for having your money tied up in a 1 year CD. And then a 5 year CD is 1.15. So just barely over 1%. Or let me say it another way. Less than half of the inflation rate for putting your money into a 5 year CD.
Yeah.
If you're not, ladies and gentlemen, if you're not looking at alternatives,
that's a lousy deal.
That's a bad deal. You're guaranteed to lose 2% on your money by putting it into a 5 year CD for the next 5 years, inflation adjusted. So you're going to lose 10% for the 5 year period after you factor in inflations. Okay. Lisa's looking at me going, you need to stop the break. So we're going to stop for the break. We'll come right back with more analysis of the markets, and we're going to break it down for you, Finglish to English.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Okay, we're back. And, you know, before we get to our Finglish English, let me hit a couple of numbers that before the break, Scott was talking about some of the international activity and things looking a little better in Europe and, you know, people settling down a little bit. Around the world, international stock indices, Brazil on a tear. 16.5% year-to-date return for their market. Now, again,
talk about volatile.
Very volatile. And, you know, all of the stock indices that I talk about around the world, remember that 2011, we ended up basically flat. They were all down by 10 to 20% or 25% around the world. So some of these are just digging out of the hole of their market and how badly they fell down. So with that nice setup, Brazil up 16, Germany up 14.5, Italy up 8.5, India up 17.5 year to date.
Last year's worst market.
Exactly. They were down, what, 25, 24?
No, it was closer to 40.
Wow. Crazy. And, of course, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, we, again, closing in on that 13,000-point number. We're year to date up almost 6%, and the S&P's up 8.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah, pretty good stuff, and it looks like some momentum may continue. We did get also on Friday the Leading Economic Indicators Index, basically made up of things that have a tendency to lead the market, retail sales, employment numbers, manufacturing, things like that, up to its highest level since July of 08. So a good number there.
That's very good. That's very good.
Happy about that one. And then looking at next week, busy week next week. Of course, Monday, domestic markets are closed for the holiday. Lots of earnings still, lots of retail earnings to come. Walmart, Target, Macy's, Radio Shack, get the regular jobless claims number on Thursday. There are a fair number of home sales numbers coming out next week, and the Michigan consumer sentiment number on Friday. So we'll be looking forward to seeing that one as well.
Okay. Well, that's good stuff. And, you know, we got to talk about the $6 trillion of fake U.S. Treasury bonds. You know, it's they were Treasury bonds. You know, it's enough that we've got, what, $15, $16 trillion of real debt?
Right. I mean, come on.
That the forgers decided to come up with another $6 trillion? I don't know. But
yeah, $6 trillion in counterfeit bonds intercepted between Zurich and Hong Kong. It's not overly uncommon, believe it or not, for these massive fake bonds to appear. The last couple ones that I remember, even just a few years ago, came out of the Philippines, and it was basically a guy that walks out of the woods and he says, "Hey, I found a plane back there. It was full of all these bonds."
And people want to believe it.
And these are bonds that are, the counterfeit bonds are in denominations that have never even existed. We actually stopped printing paper bonds, paper treasury bonds, in 1980. So anything that was, look, I found these 1992 treasury bonds. They're not even good fakes, most of them.
That's just so funny.
So the mafia is involved, and it's almost laughable, except to know that if we're catching these, there are some that probably are not being caught. Usually what's happened is these things are deposited in central banks, like the Venezuelan Central Bank, and the depositor receives a line of credit, and that's how the fraud basically works.
And they get the money, and then they run.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, speaking of taking the money and running, the looks like the payroll tax reduction extension, say that five times fast, is going to go through, and it's going to the president's desk for signature, and he's already said he'll sign it.
Yeah, they got that one through without a whole lot of consternation, or, seems like everybody just got along on that one.
I think the better word is bowed, and I think I'm actually disappointed, and maybe that's not politically correct for me to be disappointed here, but my goal is not to be politically correct or popular on the political side. I want to do good work for my clients, but I'm not trying to run for politics. So here's my thing. What happened to all this shared fairness, shared responsibility, and all that? By doing this, I think the legislators, the elected officials, are more concerned about getting votes than they are about doing what's right for the country, because they know this is going to add $100 billion with a B dollars to our deficit, because they're not matching it with spending cuts.
And the original bill had spending cuts, but they were.
So they said, oh, well, we don't want to be the ones that get painted by the other side as being for a tax increase on everyday workers.
Yeah.
And I get that, but it's politically expedient and it's dumb financially. It's going to cost $100 billion, and it's going to be added to the deficit. We don't need them adding any more to the deficit. The average person, basically, it costs them $20 a week. Now, $20 a week is 20 bucks a week, and that's $20 we could spend on something else or put towards something we need to pay for. But if we're talking about what's the fancy political words they use, shared responsibility and fairness and all of that, come on. I just think that they could have done what was right, and instead they did what was politically convenient, and they punted. So, all right, well, we're going to punt our way to a break, and we'll come right back. Stick around.
What if the process of creating your financial plan was easy, hassle-free, and straightforward? What if it was conducted by a friendly professional, and there was nothing expected of you in return? It almost sounds too good to be true, right? It's the way David Holland has been doing business at his firm, Holland Financial, for over 15 years. Since day one, it has been David's mission to provide individuals with practical solutions for their retirement needs. Financial planning doesn't have to be complicated or stressful. To learn more about our services, visit us at hollandfinancial.com or call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your complimentary consultation. That number again is 888-747-7526.
We are back, and it is time to...
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
So I'm going to break it down for you, and my topic to break down today is fixed income securities. You know, the stock market, and when I say stock market, I mean the equity stock market, gets all the attention. They make all the headlines. The global stock market is, get this, about $44 trillion, trillion with a T, and it gets all the attention. You know, we even on our show, how much did we talk about the bond market during the opening discussion? How much did we talk about bonds or any of the other fixed income securities being affected by oil or any of that? Well, there you have it. And so it's a natural thing for the global stock market and the activity in the markets to kind of hog all the headlines. But you know what's interesting is that the global bond market is almost double the size of the global stock market, $82 trillion. And I got my data. I can squint here, Asset Allocation Advisors, and that was from 09. So it's a big thing. It's a big deal. So what is a fixed income security? Many of you have them and may or may not realize that that's what they are. Bonds, commercial paper, which is a corporate IOU, and preferred stocks. Now, preferred stocks are part, technically from a CPA's perspective, they're part of the balance sheet. They're part of the ownership of the company. They're not debt, but they sort of act like it because they are a little different than regular stock. And then you also have REITs, not RITs, REITs, R-E-I-T-S, REITs, Real Estate Investment Trusts. Yes, they invest in real estate, but a lot of people look at them as fixed income type instruments. So these are four types of common fixed income securities. And so they have their place, maybe not talked about quite as often in the headlines, but they have their place as part of an overall portfolio. So I wanted to mention them to you and talk a little bit about them, because I think that when we build portfolios, and this is what we do at my firm and a lot of advisors, I think, consider the introduction or inclusion of bonds as part of a portfolio helps to reduce volatility. The more income somebody needs instead of growth, they take on a larger role. If somebody says to me, David, I want a low-risk portfolio, I want it to be in investments, I want it to remain liquid, I know that I'm going to look at probably putting the money at Fidelity. We can manage it for a fee. And I'm going to look at one of my more conservative investment strategies. And that means that I'm going to be looking at a lot more bonds than I am stocks. I still am going to be looking at mutual funds or electronically traded funds, but I'm going to be looking at more bonds and fixed income securities than individual stocks. One of the things that is important for us to think about and talk about here is that there are different ways of getting these securities. You can buy bonds, you can buy real estate investment trusts, you can buy the preferred stocks, corporate IOUs, you can buy all those things individually, or you can buy them through mutual funds. Now, you probably can tell where I'm headed with this. I like the diversification of mutual funds, especially no-load funds. I love no-load funds there, especially if we can get them at no transaction fee. You can buy them literally without a transaction cost. We use Fidelity. All our money that we manage for a fee is held at Fidelity and a little bit at Ameritrade also. But the idea is that we keep our costs very low, because what we don't pay in fees can stay in the portfolio. And if somebody's managing money professionally like we are, well, guess what? That's our job. There are a lot of things that advisors do with fixed income securities. They look at them as a way to produce income. They look at them as a way to reduce the volatility. Without a doubt, the portfolio that has both stocks and bonds is going to be less volatile than a portfolio that is just stocks, because bonds and stocks don't tend to necessarily move in lockstep. Now, you may be scratching your head and saying, well, you know what, David? I don't really know what a bond is, or I don't really know what a preferred stock is. Or what is a commercial paper? What is that? Is that a special paper you guys use at the office to print out documents on? Nope. It's a type of corporate IOU. So we're going to take a quick break. We come back, I'm going to give you some more nuts and bolts about what these things are and how they can be an appropriate part of your portfolio. Stick around.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week I shouted at my grandson, and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs. A message from the Alzheimer's Association.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 on WESH Channel 2, starting February 20th.
You will love what you see. And I tell you what, I have a new respect for people that are on television. You know, we make fun of actors and well, we make fun of everybody, don't we, as a culture? But I have a new respect for those folks that put their face on TV. That's a lot of work, but it's worth every bit of it. And I hope you enjoy the TV program. Make sure you tune in. Now, before the break, I was talking about some of the basics. And it's, you know, it's okay not to know. It's just not okay to not get maybe a little bit more knowledgeable. And so I'm going to make it easy for you to continue my conversation and with you about fixed income security. So real quick, what's a bond? What is a bond? Well, a bond is issued by a company needing money. And they do that with a formal agreement. It's a contract between themselves and the people that lend money to them, be that individual investors, be that large institutional investors, be that mutual funds that buy those bonds. So when they do that, they buy those bonds, and then the mutual fund can receive the income from those bonds, and that's part of what makes the mutual fund have its earnings that they can distribute down to the shareholder. Now, who issues bonds? Well, guess what? All kinds of people or companies issue bonds. Corporations, governments. Okay, we've heard a lot, of course, about government bonds with all of our conversations about not only Greece, but also the U.S. debt. The United States has $15 trillion in debt. They're bonds. Okay, so it's the same sort of thing. Now, one of the questions that people sometimes ask or should ask is, are bonds liquid? And the answer generally is yes. They're easy to buy, they're easy to sell, because usually there's somebody on the other end that will buy the bond. Not always, though. I remember having a client that came to us and asked us to manage their accounts. We gave them a second opinion on what they were doing, and we managed their accounts. And when we started working for them, they had some individual bonds that we needed to get out of to go into some other things based on how they needed their plan to work. And amazingly, at that time, of course, we all remember 2008 was a pretty ugly year. Well, a lot of the trouble wasn't just on the stock market, the equity side of the equation. It was also on the fixed income side. In fact, some of the problems emanated from that side of the house, if you will. So we actually had a very difficult time finding a way to sell their bonds. They're literally wasn't any buyer. Think of a lake that's all frozen up and you're trying to get to underneath the ice. The liquidity was frozen up and there just wasn't a lot of demand for individual bonds. So they usually are liquid, but sometimes that's not the case, which is why, of course, mutual funds that hold bonds, you're not putting all your money into one bond or a handful of bonds. If you put your money into a mutual fund that is investing in bonds, you might have money in over 300 bonds, which is, I think, a much better strategy. The bond market is not always the most efficient thing, and you can have a lot better liquidity by working with a mutual fund that's investing in bonds. Who rates bonds? That's a good question. Well, Standard & Poor's, Moody's, those are the folks that kind of give the credit check, if you will, on bonds, and some bonds are rated better than others. Well, here's a question that you're probably wondering. What can cause bonds to go up or down in value? Well, interest rates play a big part and how bonds behave. Now, other factors include the company's financial strength, because remember, this is debt to the company, and if the company has financial problems or even goes bankrupt, the bond holders may only get part or literally nothing when all is said and done. So there is risk of default and not getting your money back on bonds, which is why some people prefer higher quality bonds, and therefore that gives them more safety. However, on the other side, some people and some mutual funds, institutional investors say, well, you know, wouldn't hurt to have some lower risk bonds because we'll earn more money on that. There's a direct correlation between interest earned and the risk taken, or what you can earn in the risk taken. So if you're looking for more return, more yield, more bang for your buck, usually that means there's going to be more risk, especially when you talk about fixed income securities. You either have to go with a lower credit quality company or government to borrow. I mean, we talked not long ago about the Italian 10-year bond going over 7%. Why? Why was the yield on 10-year bonds for Italy going to 7%? It was because the perceived risk was a lot higher than, say, Germany or the United States. Our 10-year bond right now is around 2% yield to maturity. That means you put your money in, it's going to earn about 2% a year for the next 10 years. At the time we were talking about the Italian bonds getting up to 7, that's a 5-point spread. So that's a pure reflection of the level of risk perceived by the investor buying those bonds. Bonds also have a fixed rate of return once you buy them, but the value of that bond can fluctuate. You buy the bond, and if interest rates go up, that bond will go down in value. So one thing to keep in mind, as you seek higher returns by buying longer-term bonds, they will pay a higher rate, no question, the longer you go. But if there's a need for liquidity, I think you've got to be very careful going into longer-term bonds. Some people I've met with, they've got bonds that are so long that those bonds will outlive them. So many times it makes more sense to go with a diversified portfolio of bonds, something that has both short, medium, and long-term bonds, so that you get a better mix and you also reduce the potential impact on that portfolio of higher interest rates. Okay, Lisa's waving her flag saying, take a quick break. We'll do that. We'll come back. I'll talk to you more about how bonds are risky and some of the things you can do about that to make sure that you're doing the right things with this part of your portfolio. Stay tuned.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
We're back, and you're learning more probably about bonds than you knew, and if not, that's okay too, but it's a good refresher. Now, here's a question that you may have as well. How does this work with bonds? How do I make more money with bonds, or how do I protect myself with bonds? Well, right now, the obvious concern is at some point, inflation is going to kick up enough, and the economy is going to get strong enough that they'll raise interest rates, but the Federal Reserve has made it pretty clear that they're not planning on raising rates for at least a couple, 3 years. Now, well, that's good. I still wouldn't go ultra long on bonds because they will at some point start to raise rates to tame inflation. Now, my professional opinion is that, and I think it's an educated one, I hope it is, that the Fed, the powers to be, the lords of the manor, will allow inflation to run a little hot. And I'll tell you why I think that. Right now, inflation is running about 2.5%. Social Security recipients got a boost of about 3.5%, and that's based on the government's expectations about inflation because they usually index Social Security payments to CPI, Consumer Price Index. All right, all that said, I don't think the Federal Reserve can take the chance of destabilizing or messing up, turning the apple cart over on the economy and its budding growth and return to a stronger economy. So even if inflation runs a little hot, I don't think they'll jump on raising interest rates, because usually, historically, when inflation starts getting, you know, gets closer to that 5% number, that's the number that starts to get them anxious. We start seeing inflation get up in that 5% range. Ordinarily, the Federal Reserve would step in and start raising rates to start to rein in the inflation. And what are they trying to do? It doesn't like all of a sudden inflation stop. Inflation is based on greater demand for goods and services because the economy is running hotter. Inflation is caused by fewer dollars chasing more goods, and that is what causes the demand is greater. So we have to keep that in mind as we think about fixed income securities and these other things. Now, again, I think inflation is going to get higher before they raise rates. So do you want all long-term bonds? No, you don't, because if interest rates do spike, Morningstar, one of the companies that we work with, does a lot of research on bonds. They do ratings on bonds. They did a study, and what they found was that for a 1% increase in a 10-year bond, 1% increase in the interest rates caused a 10-year bond to lose 10% of its value. You heard me correct. So here's the math. $100,000 in a 10-year bond. Interest rates go up 1%. That bond's going to lose $10,000 in value. Now, if you hold the bond at maturity, you'll get your full value of the bond, the face value. But let's say somebody's got 25-year duration or maturity bonds. I saw somebody come in the other day and he had 22, his bonds didn't mature for 22 years. Well, that's a long time. You buy 20-year bonds and you're going to be with those bonds for a while, especially if you wait till interest rates start to go up. If somebody has bonds that are that long, if they were asking me to advise them, I would be looking at pulling that back and going with maybe a 7 to 10 year maturity. put in, swap out some of those longer term bonds for some shorter term bonds to get some better diversification and reduce the risk that when interest rates go up, they don't get clobbered. And it's just a simple way. So what are some other thoughts about this? Well, I've only mentioned some of the bonds. There's lots of types of bonds, corporate bonds, treasury bonds, high yield bonds, also called junk bonds, municipal bonds, foreign bonds, short, medium, long bonds. And I didn't even get a chance to get into all this other stuff, which I'll save for the next show, talking about REITs and preferred stocks and giving you some of that basic stuff that I think is helpful for all of us to be aware of. Investing is a lot of science, and it's also, there's some art to it. But the most important thing is to have the knowledge to understand this stuff. And you know what's interesting and ironic is as you learn more, you may choose to go two paths. You may decide, you know what, I know a lot about this and I like it. I think I'll manage my money myself. Have at it. I applaud that. But it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of work. You got to stay on top of it. And if it's not your thing, then knowing more, you know then that maybe you need professional advice. And I recommend people get competent, independent, unbiased advice to navigate through all this. So anyway, that's our show for today. Thanks for being with us and tune in next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 ton, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.